All right, guys, welcome to the call. Tonight I got another two more guests. We got on the phone, we got Mike Mahler and Andrew Derniat. And Andrew is a CSCS and owner of Optimal Performance Training. He is the master trainer for world champion Valerie Fedorenko's AKC certification course, an international kettlebell competitor and current American record holder for the single arm snatch. That's 147 reps, 32 kilograms. He is also certified on the Ironman Captain the Crush number 3 and is an internationally recognized measure of grip strength and competes regularly in grip events throughout the USA. And I'm also here with Mike Mahler. And Mike is a fitness information provider based in Las Vegas. He has been a kettlebell instructor since 2002 and is currently researching the field of hormone optimization and is working on a new book, Live Life Aggressively, with self-help gurus don't want you to know. For more info on Mike, go to MikeMahler.com. And actually, for more info on Andrew, go to DerniatStrength.com. And myself, I'm Ryan McGinn with MuscleGainingExperts.com. Mike, go ahead, man.
Well, thanks a lot, Ryan. Mike Mahler here, and just want to reiterate Ryan's website, MuscleGainingExperts.com. It's excellent information, so make sure you go over there and sign up and take advantage of all the great interviews he's putting out there free of charge. He's putting out so much great information. And today we have one of the best kettlebell instructors in the business, one of the best strength coaches as well, and that's Andrew Derniat. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on the call and look forward to getting some great training information today. Let's get started with how you got into kettlebell training in the first place.
Got into kettlebell training while I was coaching, assistant lacrosse coach at the College of Worcester, and I was really coming off of my own lacrosse career as an All-American down at Ohio Wesleyan. And was looking to just further my strength gains, find a way to get myself in better shape. Like I said, I was an All-American lacrosse player, played in Final Four, and thought I was doing pretty well. Researched the kettlebells online and was like, man, I like what they had to say. You know, the information sounded useful. So finally got my hands on a couple of 28s, had a big head about me at the time, and was within 5 minutes was really just sort of put in my place and humbled by the experience, and was like, wow, there's really something to this. It's not one of those infomercial gimmicks out there that just sort of looks good and flashy. So
right.
That hooked me right off the bat, and it worked, and that was what really meant a lot to me.
Well, what kind of training were you doing before you got into kettlebell training?
I was doing it was very, I guess, muscle and fitness bodybuilding type lifting. You know, it was going in, you know, doing drop set pyramid scheme, chest on Monday, back on Tuesday, legs Wednesday, shoulders Thursday, arms on Friday, and then repeat and do it again the following week. Is where I really was working with all through college. Get into the kettlebells, and that definitely changed things up and has expanded from there now.
So you weren't doing a lot of strongman-type training before kettlebells. That's something that occurred afterwards, the grip strength?
Correct. Yep. All that, has been post-kettlebells. I look at kettlebells as sort of my gateway drug into the other realms of strength training is sort of the best way to put it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's really interesting because kettlebells really got you into strength training-focused workouts in general, and you're actually the world record holder in the Opolinax deadlift?
That is correct, yeah. I lifted 464 pounds at Chad Woodall's grip competition this past June to set the world record. I had the previous world record that was long-standing, of 454 pounds, I actually beat by 1 pound last year at U.S. Nationals, the 455, but was like, man, you know, beating it by 1 pound, I felt was kind of cheap, and I was like, I knew I had more in me, and so I had another opportunity to go after it and was able to pull through big time.
How thick is that barbell?
It's a 2-inch diameter barbell, but the other thing that not a lot of people realize is on the Apollon axle, it's smooth. There is no knurling to help you out at all. It's just a 2-inch hollow steel pipe that you're lifting on. because there's some other 2-inch barbells out there that have some knurling on it, and those are kind of nice. I mean, you can pretty well do about 500 pounds on those without much problem.
I mean, people don't realize, people who've never used a thick barbell before, I don't have an Apollon X, but I do have a thick barbell, and it humbles you real fast because, I mean, if you can deadlift 400 pounds with a regular barbell, you're going to be shocked how much weaker you are until you develop that grip strength. Even after you develop
numerous, I've seen numerous and know of numerous 700 and 800-pound deadlifters that, you know, their legs and their whole body's just, you know, it has that convulsing shakes and they've got, you know, 380, 400 pounds max in their hands. And these are, you know, like I said, 700, 800-pound deadlifters, and you're thinking, man, 400 pounds should be nothing to these guys. And it's glued to the ground or it gets to their knees and they're just, they can't hold on. So it's quite amazing.
Well, what do you think some of the benefits are of thick barbell training for athletes in general?
Definitely the thick bar is going to work the grip. And I don't think of really any sport out there that doesn't involve the use of the hands. I work with a lot of, you know, here in the Midwest, work with a lot of football players. And, all right, you know, that first initial contact is important. But being able to, you know, very, you know, not every tackle in the game of football is square, you know, you're not squared up. There's a lot of just one-arm tackles. A guy grabs a jersey or grabs an arm and rips him down. That's where the thick bar is really going to come in handy and benefit the athletes in a sport like football. Other sports where, you know, basketball, you know, being able to hold on to the ball when you're going up for rebounds. You're contesting that ball with another athlete and an opponent. You have, you know, the guy that's stronger is going to win. And if your weak link is your hands and your fingers, the other guy can benefit from that. You know, you look at, you know, baseball, golf, two things that connect the club to your body are your hands. You know, guys wear batting gloves and put tacky on the bat for a reason, to improve their grip, because if your grip is strong and that connection is strong, you have a good transfer of power from your hips through the midsection in your core of your body out through your hands. If that grip is loose, the bat vibrates, the club vibrates, you don't hit the ball as far and as hard. And so it really plays a huge part in a lot of sports, and it's often a very overlooked area.
Oh, no question. I mean, just think about Alexander Karelin, the great Russian wrestler. I remember hearing interviews with some of his opponents, and one of the things they all basically stated was that when he grabbed you, it basically shut off the blood circulation in that area because it was like a vice grip. And there was no way to get out of it. You're in this vice grip, and he was able to just – he also had the strength to just pick you up and chuck you. And he's doing this with guys who weigh 270 pounds, 280 pounds, who've never had that happen to them before.
Yeah.
No doubt. And I forget the strength coach, but another one mentioned what you basically just said about grip strength in football, where the ability to slam into an opponent, and if you can just grab that person, it's not about just that initial explosive contact.
And the last time I checked, you know, there's 11 guys on a side on a football field. All right, if my first contact doesn't knock the guy down, he's still not going to run very fast if I'm holding on and he's got to drag me down the field. You know, I guarantee the slowest guy on my team, my slowest teammate of mine, is going to catch him. If I don't care how fast or how strong he is, pulling a 230-pound body, you know, hanging off of you, you're not running very fast. And so it's a team sport. And so if you may not make that initial contact, one of your teammates is going to come pick up for you because you didn't let go. And now, you know, the ultimate, you know, goal for football is you win the game. And I tell my – I coach high school lacrosse here in town, and tell the guys, I was like, guys, you know what? You know, we need to get the win. It doesn't always have to look pretty. Yeah, we want to strive for that ideal and be technically sound across the board. But there's something to be said just for going out there scrapping and mucking it up and just getting down and dirty and doing the work that needs to be done.
Oh, no question. Now, with the Apollon X, training. Did you find that kettlebell training actually helps you with that goal? What motivated you to even go in that direction?
Oh, definitely. The Apollo and Axel in the thick bar training is very much a support type of grip, where the hand is not opening or closing. It's staying in a static position around the object. That is very much identical to doing swings and snatches and cleans with a kettlebell, and most kettlebell handles are bigger than the standard barbell handle. And so that really helps emphasize that. But I think the biggest benefit to that support grip and my grip overall coming from kettlebells is what I've come to term is the dynamic eccentrics that happen with the kettlebells, which is when on the downswing of that kettlebell, it's dynamically loading your grip with a greater poundage than is stamped on the side of that bell,
right.
because it's falling due to gravity and acceleration. Same thing on a clean, a snatch comes from overhead, and a swing's coming from, you know, anywhere between, you know, mid chest and overhead level. That dynamic eccentric really forces the grip to adapt and change and become stronger. And I've noticed that when I'm snatching and doing my swings very well, not only is my thick bar on the axle strong, but also my crushing strength with, they have the Captains of Crush grippers and other companies have the coil spring grippers. And some of these grippers, you know, they're if you hang a weight off the very end of them, you know, it's over 200 pounds of pressure to squeeze close, and there's very few guys walking the earth that are closing these grippers, and that strength has also been greatly enhanced from my kettlebell work.
Oh, no question. I guess you could make an argument for the reverse as well, where all the work you've done with the Apollo Axe and other grip training has carried over back to your kettlebell training.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, it definitely goes both ways.
Now, do you find that some people like to just do kettlebell training? That's all they want to do. And
yep.
Focusing on the sport, or they're just focusing on fitness. And then there's other people that want to combine kettlebell training with other implements. Now, is there a benefit to just focusing on kettlebells versus combining it with other implements, or do you think the ideal is to combine kettlebells with, let's say, barbells and maybe some other training tools?
I feel that I like the ideal of being the combination training. With a lot of the people, athletes and individuals I work with, and myself included, training this way, there is a lot of benefits to the barbell motions. I do full back squats. Frankly, I have yet to get to find a kettlebell that's heavy enough to elicit the the hormone response release out of my body that heavy back squats and as well as the strength benefits that heavy back squats and deadlifts elicit. You know, I'm back squatting 500 pounds. I'm deadlifting 605. I've yet to come across those kettlebells that allows me to work that hard with the bells. At the same time, I also like the pure explosiveness of Olympic lifting. You know, if you're snatching 100 kilos overhead, you have some explosiveness in your body. Now, at the same time, I like what the kettlebells have to offer because they have that middle range, that strength and endurance aspect that really works my heart and lungs and gets my cardio going. At the same time, by working with the bells, I'm not losing per se my muscle integrity that say bicycling and or jogging on a treadmill or elliptical machine would compromise. I'm able to up my cardio, make sure I have a good cardiovascular system, heart and lungs capacity, but at the same time I'm not wasting away hard fought muscle mass and hard fought muscle activation by doing those super low intensity cardio activities. And that's,
oh, yeah,
you know,
no
I
question.
Think,
I mean, the whole notion of just doing really low-intensity work for 90 minutes to 2 hours to get into that fat-burning zone is just ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't have that kind of time, man. Give me a 10-minute snatch set and let me go. I'll be burning it out I mean, I had a doctor that I work with. He was in the gym this evening. He's 53 years old. You know, we got done with a 6-minute snatch set, and he had a resting heart rate of 190. Now, granted,
right.
He wasn't resting at that time. He was just concentrating on breathing and counting his pulse. But that's where he was at after a quite intense 6 minutes. And you're going, man, he's 53 and he's got a pulse of 190. You're going, man, that's cooking. I'm like, yeah. And guess what? He was working. We're you know, cleaning those arteries out at Mach velocity. So he's not complaining about, oh, I'm not in the fat burning zone.
Right. I mean, the way to basically end the argument is always to say, look at sprinters, what they look like versus marathon runners.
Exactly.
And that's pretty much answered the discussion
there. Most people want to look like the sprinter, but they train like the marathon runner. And
right.
I go, yeah, we got a little bit of a problem here.
I think what it comes down to is the fact that sprinting is really hard. I mean, if you're really putting in a maximum effort, but you can go to a field and just jog at a rapid pace and think that you're doing some sprinting. But if you're not going full out, 50 yards, 100 yards, whatever you're doing, and then doing several rounds, you're not really doing sprinting. You're doing what you think is sprinting.
Yep.
And it's a lot easier to walk or go jogging.
I'm completely with you there. I was like, you know, the slow, long duration cardio, you know, was popular because it was frankly easy. And I love the argument that people come in the gym, oh, you have it so easy. And I tell them, I say, hey, come back at 7 o'clock and I'll show you how easy it is to be me. And you can work alongside me and find out just how easy it is to, you know, train and be in shape and physically fit. I was like, cause there's no magic pill. There's no magic button out there for us. You got to work at it.
Oh, yeah, no question. And then on the other hand, there's no question that triathletes are not great athletes and that what they do is really hard. It's just that you don't want to model that exercise if your goal is improved physique composition, and you don't want to model it if time constraints are an issue either, because you're going to have to put in
very
a lot
true.
Of time to get good at that
yeah,
kind of
training. Yeah, very true. I mean, and they are phenomenal, you know, specimens of cardiovascular endurance. And there's a divide also as to where you want to be, you know, because that triathlete is, you know, for his ultimate endurance, he is very limited as to what he can do, and then, you know, because he's got great endurance, but you know, he's sort of the burning building example of, if I'm in a burning building and a triathlete comes in to get me, he can get to me fast. And he can sit there with me, but he's not going to be able to drag me out of the building. I'm 230 pounds. He's not taking me anywhere as a triathlete. At the same time, you go to the other side, you take a 1,000-pound squatter from Westside Barbell, and, all right, by the time he runs up the stairs, he's out of wind. Yeah, he could throw me through the wall and get me out, but by the time he gets to me, he's out of breath.
Right.
So, you know, give me the athlete that's running that 6-minute mile, squats about 500-600 pounds. All right, the guy's going to get to me. He's going to carry me out, and he's going to go in for somebody else, and he's going to go back in for five other somebody else's. And that's a great. I think that's the type of fitness I think a lot of people in the population want to have. You know, yeah, the powerlifters, they're doing it for what they need to do. And that they're a small group of the population. I think the vast majority of people that we see as trainers that are coming into the gym, you know, they want to do a little bit of everything. They need to have that strength. So when, you know, their son or daughter calls them up and says, hey, I want to go shoot some hoops, so let's go throw the football. They can do that without breaking down and help each other out. And that's where I think a lot of fitness needs to go.
No, those are all great points. And what you're saying reminds me of something Louis Simmons said, one of the best powerlifting coaches out there. He talked about how the whole notion of just picking one goal to the exclusion of others is not the way to go. He said you need to be able to balance a variety of goals in an overall paradigm rather than make one mutually exclusive where you're just focused on getting stronger, but that's it. That's your only goal, because you're going to start compromising yourself in other areas. And also, even if you don't care about the overall health, which, I mean, most people care about health, but let's say you don't, you're going to get a lot better at whatever you want to do by taking a little bit from those other paradigms. Like, for example, yourself, you stated that when you started competing in strongman competitions, you weren't the strongest guy there, but you were able to outlast a lot of people because of your strength endurance. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about that. Tell us about how you got into strongman training and just how you were able to do really well in that with a lot of the training that you do.
Yeah, got into strongman. Obviously, it's on TV and it's a popular thing out there. It's fun. It's sort of that renegade type of training where you're out there lifting rocks and sandbags, flipping tires, and so it's very raw and primal, and I think really appeals to a lot of people. That especially if you're sitting at a desk all day, you need that just a way of letting loose. And so really was drawn towards the strongman and didn't really know a whole lot. You know, I just picked a competition and said, hey, I'm going to go out there, throw my hat in the ring and see what happens. And was pleasantly surprised that, I was able to go into the Power Fest in, 2006 or 2007 out in Williamsport, and was able to do well and beat some seasoned amateur strongmen at sort of what I would think is at their own game, since I was a newbie novice at it all, and it was an open competition, and it was great. And I was like, man, strongman is you got to have that just brutal power. But what I found was these guys get tired, and to see the conditioning, you know, we do, you know, a loading medley, and 10 minutes afterwards this guy is still hyperventilating, and I'm looking at him just weird, worried, going, man, somebody call a medic, this guy's going down. You know, we stopped doing stuff 10 minutes ago, and he's been sitting here hyperventilating the whole time. And it was funny to listen to his reply, which was, oh, I need to do more cardio. I need to get on the treadmill. And I'm going, treadmill's not going to help you. You know, you can think treadmill all you want, but that is not going to help you in this situation. He needed to up the intensity of his workouts. And I'm looking at him going, all right, here, I got a kettlebell you can swing, and that'll probably help you a little bit more than walking or jogging on a treadmill for this situation right now. And a lot of the motions are very similar to kettlebell lifting. Strongman is all about pick it up, put it over your head, or pick it up and push it. And so if you look at, you know, a kettlebell swing or, you know, two-arm swing, double cleans, jerks, very, very similar. Now, at the same time, you still need to do, you know, kettlebells, again, aren't heavy enough to, you know, don't think you're going to be a great kettlebell lifter is going to be a great strongman competitor. It can help, but you can't be just mutually exclusive one into the next. But I think there's a lot that can be learned on both sides. You know, do the power lifts, but then, you know, hey, get the strongman competitors. Hey, I can up your work capacity and help you last longer in a competition.
Right. Right, no doubt. I think what we're getting here with this message being repeated in different ways is that kettlebell training in and of itself is a standalone tool, is great for work capacity, great for cardio, great for strength and endurance. And then for someone who just wants to have a good amount of strength and just be fit, it's also great. Someone who's not planning on competing in competitions or being an athlete or anything along those lines. But for someone who's really a athlete, you want to implement it in with other training tools rather than just focus on one thing. And it's kind of funny when people say, what's the one thing I should focus on? It's like, well, you don't have to make that choice necessarily when you're an athlete. I mean, unless that's all you have, and all you have are kettlebells around. But most likely, I mean, if you're in college or you're a professional athlete or you're competing on some level, you're going to have access to other things.
Correct, yeah. And you really got to look at, and especially with all the clients I deal with, it's a needs analysis. You got to go in and ask yourself, all right, what's your goal? And, you know, with athletes sometimes it's, okay, what limitations due to an injury are we rehabbing against? And what motions can we utilize? You know, I have a basketball player right now. He's coming off of a severely sprained ankle. So a lot of high-impact motions of doing like power cleans and snatches is not what we can get him back into doing right now. But I can start to activate those muscles with some swings and cleans and push presses with a kettlebell that I wouldn't be able to do otherwise if I didn't have that tool around. Now, once he progresses through that, the kettlebell is going to go more to the back burner at the end of his routine. And, yeah, the heavier power cleans and box jumps are going to become more to the forefront because he does need that explosive power. But it's the same thing with a football player. I do the same thing. And so you look at where the athlete or the individual is at now and go, okay, what's the best way to move him forward? And sometimes, yeah, kettlebells are going to take a bigger role as they advance through. Maybe they take a little bit more of a back seat role, but usually they're always there in the program at some point in time.
Yeah, no question. Now, what do you think are some of the shortcomings? Let's say someone, there's different debates on how to use a kettlebell now. We hear this all the time. You and I talk about this all the time where some people feel that kettlebells should only be used for strength endurance, the kettlebell sport being the echelon of that, while others feel that it can be used more for general fitness and strength training and physique composition improvements and whatnot. What's your take on the whole thing? And what do you feel are the shortcomings of, let's say someone just wants to compete in kettlebell sport, what are some of the shortcomings of just doing that, and how would you balance some of those shortcomings?
Yeah. I think, one, the kettlebell is a vastly versatile tool, and it's going to, for some, you know, competing there, I know kettlebell sport is very popular. I compete in it myself and love it. Obviously, I've had some quite a bit of success with it. But initially, I think, you know, when you come to a kettlebells, and any kettlebell instructor should initially start you with the slower, you know, quote-unquote bodybuilding-type motions of presses, rows, and those what would be termed, you know, those beginner exercises to build up a baseline of fitness. Now, at the same time, you know, I could take, you know, some professional bodybuilders. I have a few coming in a couple of weeks that want to integrate the kettlebells into what they're doing as bodybuilders and figure models. And we're gonna continue to do some of those slow, controlled motions with them, really isolating certain motion, certain muscles and movement patterns. But just by the nature of the way the bell hangs, it's going to change up the dynamic compared to a dumbbell, just in the shape of the kettlebell and how they can hold it, whether it be bottoms up, hold it from the bottom, or rowing just strictly from the handle. Same with the presses, lateral raises. You know, just the physics of it all change greatly, and so they're going to get a great effect by implementing the kettlebell in that way for their specific needs and goals there. Now, Once those baseline movements have been mastered and perfected, now we can look into does this individual want to get into the sport of kettlebell lifting? Now we get a little bit more ballistic motion involved. Same thing with my athletes. Most sports these days, you know, they're fast paced. It's about speed, and so we're going to start to integrate the kettlebells with a little bit more ballistic motions to better facilitate what their needs are. Over say, like I said, the fitness model bodybuilding who's going for that physique and appearance of the body. When you get to the kettlebell sport, yeah, the exercises we're choosing for kettlebell sport are quite finite. You're looking at, you know, three or four exercises at most compared to a bodybuilder that, you know, may use, you know, 10 exercises just for the shoulders alone, let alone the rest of the body. But with the kettlebell sport only using a few exercises, there are some gaps left in the overall conditioning and shape of the body. Namely, there's no deep knee bending squatting motion with kettlebell sport. And I know myself, if I cease any deep squatting motion, you know, I can, you know, the quads get overworked. I'm not getting as much flexibility and mobility in those areas, and so I really have to concentrate on making sure I squat at the very minimum on a maintenance mode, you know, using only, you know, 50-60% as a maintenance lift when I'm working heavy jerks and snatches with kettlebell sport. And so there are some definite limitations, and you got to be careful of that because, you know, I like the longevity that is with kettlebell lifting, but I think with the kettlebell sport, you got to be careful and make sure you do have a well-balanced out program. I've talked to many masters and senior lifters from overseas, and, yeah, they do the kettlebell sport well into their 60s and 70s, but you talk to them, and they also have a lot of just good overall fitness lifting that they do along with it, full deep knee bends and, you know, some swimming and cycling to round it all out for them in their older age.
Oh, yeah, that was basically going to be my next question because that makes perfect sense. Basically, if you're competing for the sport, you don't want to just focus on the two lifts you're competing in. I mean, obviously, you need to spend a lot of time doing those to get good at it, but you want to augment your program with other exercises for balance.
Exactly, yeah, and I guess if you were to break it down percentage-wise, you know, I'd say you probably are going to spend, if you're doing kettlebell sport, you're looking at, you know, probably 75% of your time is going to be with those kettlebell sport lifts, and, you know, 25% is going to be, you know, quote-unquote, you know, just auxiliary lifts, health lifts, as they've been known as, doing squats and deadlifts and other just joint mobility exercises. You know, it's going to be a smaller percentage of your overall time, but the, you know, the 75 to 80, 85% of your time is going to be doing the sport lifts. But if you're not competing for kettlebell sport, you know, there's, you know, no need to make it that great a percentage. You can get a little bit better balance and go from there.
That, definitely. Now, do you think it would make sense to do any kind of high-rep barbell work, such as high-rep cleans with the barbell or high-rep clean and presses, as a way to improve kettlebell high-rep work?
I don't see the carryover with the barbell being with high-rep work. Now, I will do what I have found is I find that, you know, doing traditional Olympic sort of sets and reps of twos and threes help with my explosiveness and my speed with the kettlebell sport lifts of the jerks, namely, because I came to the kettlebell sport with, you know, fairly strong shoulders where I'm very capable of pressing for higher reps the 32 kilogram bells. What I needed to do to increase my numbers in kettlebell sport was to be more efficient with the use of my legs and my full body and my speed of getting underneath the bells and driving them up. What I found is by doing clean and jerks with a barbell where the weight was heavy enough and I was forced to explode, the muscle memory then transferred back over to my kettlebell sport. Next thing you know, my jerks were much more crisp with the kettlebells coming from the Olympic barbell training. It definitely helped out there.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, let's say with one thing with kettlebell training, with the sport, doing high rep sets or long duration sets, 10 minutes, is you develop in tremendous structural integrity. That's one of the things that you've talked about quite a bit. Now, do you feel that that structural integrity would benefit somebody who, let's say, who's on a bodybuilding program? And if yes, why and how would that help out?
Yeah, I think that structural integrity will definitely help out, especially on the bodybuilding program, because that structural integrity is you know, I think that's a great word. I think we should use that more often than just core training. Let's change it to structural integrity training. Because with that, you know, your main structure of your core, you're able to handle greater loads. If you're able to handle a greater load, we can stimulate the muscle fibers to a greater extent before your core breaks down. When your core breaks down, injury, you know, if you're back squatting and your core breaks down, guess what? You've got a problem with a lot of weight on your back. So if that structural integrity is sound, that bodybuilder figure model can now perform more squats, lunges, step ups, what have you, to better activate and further activate the leg muscles. And same thing goes for shoulder pressing, bench pressing. You know, if that core structural integrity breaks down, your training session's over. Whereas I think the kettlebell training can really help build up that muscle mass and that tendon ligament strength that can just up your body's ability to handle higher training volume, which for some could definitely be a benefit.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if you want to get bigger and stronger, you have to do a lot of high-volume training with relatively short breaks. And if you're not fit or have good work capacity, you're not going to be able to do that. You may be able to do a couple sets, but then your strength just drops off. And, if you're using 50% less than your starting weight on your eighth or ninth set, you're not really getting the most value as if you can maintain that for a much longer time period.
Not at all. And you're not going to, yeah, you may be getting some lactic acid in the muscles, but you're not activating those muscle fibers. Those muscle fibers aren't being activated. They're not growing. And it's about muscle activation. And that's all the bodybuilder and figure models care about. They want those muscles pumped and they want them activated to grow and to get to the, so they can get to the shape that they would like them to be. And if your body's not capable of activating those muscle fibers, man, you can curl that 5-pound weight all you want, that arm's not going to grow. You need to pick up, be able to pick up and handle the heavier weights to get that muscle to grow.
Right, exactly. Now with the kettlebell sport, do you think there would be some level of muscle loss if you only focus on 10-minute sets, for example? That's all you ever do. Or do you think that if you're using a heavy enough weight, such as maybe a 53 for some men, maybe a 70-pound kettlebell for other men, they're going to be able to maintain some muscle tissue or even build some. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think definitely if you're going to be using just 10-minute sets, you're definitely going to be losing some muscle mass because the repetitions and the endurance needed to get to that length is tremendous. Now, if in your training you're using some shorter sprint sets, and things like that, yes, I think, some muscle mass can be maintained. But, again, the areas that the kettlebell sport is really going to activate is going to be the back and the shoulders and in through the hips. So, yeah, muscle mass can be gained in those areas. If you're looking at, where you're going to lose muscle mass, I mean, just myself included, my legs will get smaller if I'm not doing the other full lifts. Chest muscles, pectorals are not going to be activated as much. So, yes, muscle mass is going to be gained along the back and the spinal erectors and the shoulders, but it's going to be lost in a lot of other areas with just that kettlebell sport protocol. They round it out and you'll have a much better growth response.
I think you can also get so efficient that there isn't a training effect in terms of body composition improvements where you're just...
Oh, very much so.
Almost if the harder it is, the more it's going to have an effect on your body. And then once you get good at efficiency to the point where you know how to really pace it and keep your heart rate low, I mean, that's all necessary to excel.
Yeah, I mean, it is,
now
I guess,
getting
weightlifting...
In terms of your body. Yeah.
Weightlifting, powerlifting, and in the sports... of competing, I guess at their essence is kind of counterproductive because you're trying to elicit a growth, a physical change in the organism of your body, but at the same time, your mind is trying to make you more efficient at that exercise, which makes it less of a response on the organism as a whole. So the weights and or pacing that you use in kettlebell sport does not improve any, you will shut down your body's adaptation response completely just out of efficiency. And so I guess, as a whole, powerlifters are trying to have the best technique squatting and deadlifting, which in a sense would be counterproductive to strength gains if they didn't add more weight to the bar in a sense, and it's the same thing with kettlebell lifters. If the weight you're using does not get heavier, you're being counterproductive to strength and fitness goals in a sense. So it's kind of nice that, you know, we can move up in weight. So that is definitely a concern to have and be wary of when you're training.
Oh yeah, no question. And it's kind of like when I was doing some body weight training a long time ago, when you pick an exercise that's relatively difficult, you definitely notice a difference in your upper body. Your shoulders start getting bigger, for example, from doing something like dive bomb or push-ups if you're not good at it. But when you get to the point where you're doing hundreds of it, and you get to the point where you can do 500 in a row, you're actually in the reverse. Now your body is actually getting smaller because your body's looking for any way to make that goal easier, especially if you're doing it often. So it's almost with the 10-minute sets, your body is going to start going, well, I can't make the weight lighter, but I can make the arms lighter by getting rid of some of that unnecessary muscle tissue on the triceps and the biceps. We don't need that to be there. And let's get rid of the lats, and let's get rid of this so we have a tighter grip. I'm just saying when you take it to an extreme, I'm not saying that everybody will compete and lose
mass.
I'm just saying that's one direction where it can go if that's all you're doing.
Yep. Very true.
Now, you made some great points about how you incorporate kettlebells in with some of the fitness competitors and some of the different bodybuilding type athletes. You actually just have them do some kettlebell exercises that they would normally do with dumbbells. It makes perfect sense. Renegade rows, pressing, and whatnot. Now, what about if you're training a fitness competitor, for example, what about taking away all of their traditional forms of cardio, such as walking on a treadmill and just doing the light stuff, and just replacing that with some of the kettlebell sport type movements where you're doing time sets, maybe sprint sets some days, maybe 10-minute sets other days? I mean, do you think that a bodybuilder, for example, could just replace all of their cardio that they're normally doing with kettlebell-style cardio?
I don't think they're going to replace it entirely, but I definitely like, integrating the kettlebells in there just because, I've seen, bodybuilders come in and, they're grinding away at the cardio, just trying to cut body fat and cut water weight out of their system. And I'm like, all right, again, time is of the essence. And we can sit here and go, all right, let's integrate these speed sets, because when they're sitting on that treadmill and they're cutting weight, and that's fine, because sometimes you got to do that as a recovery method. And that low intensity helps for recovery. So it's not entirely bad to do that. But at the same time, I'm going, man, while they're cutting that water weight and cutting body fat, they're cutting a lot of muscle mass. By using the sprint sets and the longer kettlebell sets, I think they're gonna preserve some of that muscle mass, especially in through, hips, back, and shoulders, which are some problem areas for a lot of figure models and bodybuilders. Going, man, let's do some high rep snatch sets, let's do some clean and jerks, and let's go for it and get that heart rate up. Let's burn the body fat off, preserve the muscle mass, and get you cut down a little bit. And the day after doing those high rep sets, all right, hop on the treadmill and walk for a half hour as a recovery day, and then we'll get right back into doing the higher rep and or speed sets of interval training and things like that to cut you down, incorporated with their diet. Oh, man, you want to talk about some great responses. Unfortunately, I think right now sometimes what we get is, bodybuilders, we've been cutting weight like this for 50 years. This is what's been tried and true. This is what we know, and they're a little hesitant to break outside of that mold. And I tell you, I get a couple of them, and they go through it with the interval kettlebell work. They're loving it, and they don't feel like they're just wasting away to nothing while they're cutting weight.
Yeah, sounds like you figured out a great way to just implement that in there and just get the best of all worlds. Let's go through a couple different training programs. People always want to know how to design programs for different things, so maybe you could provide a couple of different examples for various goals. Let's talk about fat loss. What would be a sample fat loss program where you combine kettlebells with other training tools, barbells and whatnot?
Yep. What I'm going to do with the fat loss individuals that are coming in, is we're gonna start off. I love doing the squats and keeping that mobility with those individuals and structural integrity. So usually we'll start the day off getting the body warmed up with some mobility movements of Turkish get-ups, usually 2 to 3 sets, probably 5 on each arm, getting up off the ground. Then we're going to get into our bigger motions of the day, either squatting, benching, just to get the hormones in the right position to burn body fat. I think that's an often overlooked aspect of weight loss.
Oh, and yeah, you're ramping up those growth hormone levels with those.
Ramp the growth hormones.
Really,
it's prime,
compound exercises, it's
prime,
right?
Yeah, prime the system for fat burning. And with those, you know, with those, I don't have to get too crazy. I'd like the load to be decently heavy but not overbearing with, again, usually with the fat loss community, I'm working with a little less experienced lifters, and so I'm looking at a, you know, 3 to 4 sets of 8 to 10 repetitions on either the squat, deadlift, or the bench press to get the hormone level in the area that I like. Once I have that, now that I got the body primed with the right hormones, then yeah, we're gonna get into some kettlebell work. Some of my favorites are going with 6-minute sets. All these individuals are working with a single individual bell initially, and we're switching arms every minute. Most people, at least starting off, you know, the ability to go longer than a minute on each arm is very difficult at first. And so I don't ask them to do that. I say, all right, our goal is 1 minute at a time. You get to switch arms after the minute. Snatches, we get them going between 18, 20, 22 reps a minute. For 6 minutes, switching arms every minute with a load that's correct for that individual. They'll get a 2-minute rest break, 6 minutes again. Again, either doing snatches, you know, that 18 to 22 reps a minute, or if need be, if their grip is starting to fatigue from doing the snatches, which happens often, I'll drop it down and we'll do clean and jerks. But we're still able to maintain a good, quick, brisk pace. Clean and jerks, you're looking at 10 to 12 reps a minute. Sometimes they're not always doing clean and jerks. It's more of a clean and press with the less experienced individuals. But that's perfectly fine. What I want with the fat loss individuals is I want them performing work and doing work at a higher than comfortable pace for them, where that 6 minutes, you know, like I said, I had a physician in earlier today. He's beating at 190 beats a minute at the end of that 6-minute set. He's shredding some fat off his body doing that, and we'll do upwards of 3 6-minute sets in a half hour, group session with those kettlebells, is a very favorite way of mine to, shred some body fat off of people.
Yeah, that's all great stuff. What would you recommend to somebody where kettlebells is the only thing they have to train with? And maybe they have a couple different sizes. Maybe they only have one belt, but that's it. Obviously, they can do body weight training too.
Yep.
But not everyone's a member of the gym. And a lot of people got into kettlebell training just because they like the idea of just maybe having a couple bells at home as basically their home gym.
Yep. Oh, the best things to do, I mean, former roommate of mine, every day before work, he'd get up, go downstairs, he'd do 150 swings, hop in the shower, you know, 5 minutes a day, basically. And you know, started to improve his fitness that way. You know, kettlebells are great. They're the ultimate circuit training tool out there, because it's just that you have one or two at home, you can do everything. And, you know, for weight loss, yeah, put it in a circuit training fashion. Find 5 exercises. Let's just say, all right, I'm going to do squats. All right, if you're starting off the program, you start with body weight squats. You do a set of 10. Then you move over, you do 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups, do 10 rows on each arm with your kettlebell, and you do 10 swings on each arm with the kettlebell. There's 5 exercises, all that you can do in your living room. You rotate around those, do each one of those 5 times around, time yourself, see how fast you can do it. All right, you start to advance, and you're going, man, I can't really take off any time. All right, your squats, you pick up the kettlebell. You're still doing full squats. You've now added the resistance of your kettlebell. Now you're still doing the sets of 10. Same thing, you can up your crunches or your sit-ups on the floor. You can change that exercise up as needed. Push-ups become too easy. All right, change the push-ups to overhead shoulder presses with the kettlebell. Your shoulder girdle probably is starting to strengthen up from doing the swings and the rows and the push-ups as it is. That kettlebell is now probably capable of being pressed overhead. You need to change it up again. Go with a one-arm overhead squat with the kettlebell. Go with the SOTS press with the kettlebell. Changes up the way you're using the press into a more challenging exercise, again, to elicit the response out of your body. And this is just taking those five exercises and repeating them almost indefinitely. But every time we go through the program, as we get better, we improve it to challenge the body again, to force the body to adapt and change. Training at its simplest, I like to put it, and my mom always jokes with me, is it's adapt or die. Your body either adapts to the stimulus or you're going to perish. So we hope your body adapts to it, and we get a better being and evolution of your being as opposed to perishing.
Right. And the goal of training, of course, is to build you up, increase your strength, your fitness, your longevity, not beat you down where now you basically just have to sleep all the time, or you have to rest up on the weekends just to recover from your workouts. It's not enhancing your life. It's taking away energy from your life.
Yep. And so you start in a manageable level. And like I said, you know, some swings and one-arm rows for some people is that manageable level. Once you become proficient at that, then we can add in the snatches and the clean and presses, you know, bottoms up clean and press. You can get into, you know, go from a regular row to a renegade row. Each one is a step along the route of fitness and overall strength gains. But you start at the basics and then you advance it. All right. You get proficient at that. You advance it again. You keep doing that. I mean, I guarantee you're going to see some tremendous changes in your body for the positive.
Oh, yeah, no questions. I mean, it's basically as simple as just being creative, focusing on basic movements, finding creative ways to increase the intensity, the difficulty of different exercises, and just having a good time training, enjoying the whole process, not burning yourself out. Well, you work with a lot of high-level athletes, and you're working with college athletes, high school athletes, worked with a variety of people in the past. Now, you're really good at getting people on really solid programs where you can modulate the intensity so they're not burning out. Is there anything you do with your clients for restoration, any advice you give them, any recovery techniques that you've found that have worked pretty well?
Nutrition is vitally important. It is something that I know at first when I got into it, I didn't understand just how important nutrition was to the overall standing. And obviously, with someone like yourself, Mike, and your knowledge and research into the matter has been deeper than most I know out there. And so I always love, you know, reading your stuff because it's definitely spot on. But that is the biggest one that I promote. And it's the nutrition around your workouts that I found to be very vital, especially for myself. One thing, you know, everybody's, you know, especially a lot of the high school guys come in wanting that post-workout, you know, protein shake. And I've really noticed, myself included, is drink a protein shake an hour before your workout. Do your workout and find out just how productive you really can be. It's amazing. You have that protein shake, you know, an hour and a half before, primes your system. The recovery starts before you start breaking your muscles down. Have that protein, you know, in your body to be utilized right away. And, man, my workouts are tremendous. My recovery's faster across the board. It's phenomenal. And so that's one that I've really started hampering on across the board. And then I also do a lot of dynamic joint mobility motions on the off days. You know, and with high school guys, sometimes, static stretching is the way to go because it's an easy enough thing and they know what they're doing. They can't mess themselves up. And when they're not training on an off day, sometimes, especially for high school, college athletes that are doing more than, you know, all they like to do is sit around and twiddle their thumbs playing Xbox. If I can get them to do some stretching on an off day, sometimes that's a feat in itself.
Oh, no question. No, all good advice. Now, Let's talk a little bit about your training, and then we'll let you go. We could definitely keep you on for a couple more hours with all the great advice you're putting out there, but we'll save some of that for our course we're doing next month, and we'll talk a little bit about that at the end of the call too. But let's talk about your own training. When you get to a point where you're at, where you're a really high-level athlete and coach, how much of a strict program design do you follow, and or how much of it is instinctive? In other words, would you say that your training is more instinctive at this point, where you basically make changes as you go along? Maybe you make changes right on the spot in a workout, or do you tend to design programs for yourself like you would a client and try to stick to those guidelines?
I will design them, you know, with some strict guidelines, but at the same time, I think the ultimate training knowledge is learning to know your body quite well. And what I have found, and I think a lot of other trainers have found throughout the years, is you do three hard, you know, after about three hard work weeks of just really getting after it, steady build-up training, your body needs a little bit of a break. And what I should say is, you can train your butt off for about 5 weeks, and your body's going to force you to take a break. Whereas if I train my butt off and just train hard for 3 weeks, take a break on the fourth, and then ramp it back up again, I can train pretty much all year round like that without my body really screaming at me, telling me, hey, take it easy. That's probably the most valuable thing I found, because you know, when I was in high school, I felt like I could just go all day. I didn't need a break. But then all of a sudden, nagging injuries would show up, or all of a sudden I'd just be tired for a week. That was my body's way of telling me, you went too far. Whereas now, yeah, I'm pretty structured every fourth week. Andrew's taking, you know, a lesser percentage in his workouts. And usually that's 50 to 60% of my max is the most I'm going to work with. With kettlebell sport, it's kind of interesting because there's not strict percentages that people have used for volume, and I'm starting to really track mine and put together some good percentages to be utilized volume-wise and intensity for kettlebell sport. So I'm really anxious to have some of that data sort of compiled and put together here pretty shortly, which ought to be very interesting. But, yeah, so my training is on that strict scale. But then there's some days where it's just not there. I have a bare minimum that I have set forth for my day. Once I get through that, I can skip the rest of my day if I'm having an off day. But then at the same time, I have that sort of extra goodie bag that's left there of, okay, hey, if I get through my minimum when I'm still feeling good, here's some extra exercises that I will add into my day. So there is that intuitive side to it as well that doesn't always occur with my athletes, but the longer I've worked with my athletes, I get a good sense of when they walk in the door, who's going to have a good day and who's not. If you're having a good day, you get the extra stuff. If you're having a bad day, we get to the minimum, and I say, all right, let's do some stretching. Let's get out of here, because, you know, your mind and your brain and your body's just not with it today. So it is a bit of both. You know, I think some of the best coaches out there and strength trainers have that intuitive sense with their clients, but at the same time, you know, they have a good set plan in place, and I think a lot of them say, yeah, there's the non-negotiable exercises, and then from there, you know, we sort of play it by ear after that.
Right, exactly. No, it's all really good advice. I mean, one thing I found with my online clients is I would develop programs that I thought were basically good basic programs to get them going in the first week. And what would happen is it would be too difficult for them, but they wouldn't tell me that until the end of the week. So I'd get these training journals. Someone says, okay, I made it through the first day's workout, but I puked two times, but I didn't want to give up, so I kept going.
Yeah.
So that if you're training instinctively, you're not going to keep going when you're about to puke, and you're certainly not going to keep going after you have, and you're not going to do that often. So, I mean, an example of following a plan too closely is just that right there, where you definitely need to make some modifications. So I've actually erred on the side now where I make it almost a little bit too easy just to make sure, just so I can assess where they're at. easy, we can always ramp it up. But what you don't want to do is it's too hard, and now the person's wiped out from the first week, and it's going to take them another
worse,
week
injured.
To recover from that. And or there's some injury occurs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not good. So I always err on the side of go too easy. And sometimes what you find is the easy, you know, beware the easy workout, because the easy, when done diligently, can be quite hard.
Sure.
I've posted some workouts on my training log, where I've had some people comment in going, you know, that looks easy. Tell me what it was really like. And I was going, no. I was like, you know, it may only be two lines of work that you read, but don't confuse short with a smell the roses type of day. I was like, there was a lot of work done and a lot of pain and suffering to get through that. And then there's other protocols where, you know, there's a lot of volume done. But, you know, if the volume goes up, the intensity is usually down. And those aren't too bad of days. Yeah, you're in there for a while doing a bunch of stuff. But, man, the intensity was nothing.
Right, exactly. No, that's a good point. I mean, sometimes I'll do high volume on deadlift, 8 sets of 3, and people respond going, wow, looks like a really intense workout, where in reality it wasn't really that intense at all. You're taking short breaks in between each set, and by the end of the workout you feel refreshed and ready to go. You're not wiped out. Well, other times I'll do a 2-mile walk with a 100-pound vest on, and people kind of underestimate the difficulty of that and go, well, what's the point of that, or what's the benefit? And I go, do it one time, and you'll never ask me that question again.
Yeah, you'll never ask again. Yep.
Yeah, benefits are obvious, and those workouts are way harder than just doing some high volume with relatively high intensity.
Yep.
So there's no question. It can be simple, can be very deceptive. Going for a 2-mile walk with some weight on doesn't really sound like anything that'll be that difficult, because it's not complicated, but
it's
not easy. If you've never worked into that before. Well, this has been an excellent call. Incredible information. Just to reiterate your website, Andrew, it's durniatstrength.com. That's D-U-R-N-I-A-T strength.com, all one word. And Andrew has a lot of great information. He's got a bunch of articles on there. He's got some really inspiring clips of him training on YouTube, doing some of the stuff that we talked about on the call, the Apollyon Axe deadlift and some incredible kettlebell feats of strength. Also, Andrew is going to be one of the main instructors at a course we're doing together next month in Los Angeles. It's going to be October 9 through 11. It's called Kettlebell Training in the Age of Quarrel. And one of the goals of the course is to just show the variety of different ways you can use the kettlebell for a lot of different goals successfully, kind of cut through a lot of the dogma and a lot of the debates on what's the one way it should be used. There's a variety of ways it can be used for different benefits, and it all boils down to what your goals are. So we can show you a variety of effective ways to implement the kettlebell into your training program, just like Andrew does with his clients, or to focus on more kettlebell-focused programs for a variety of different goals. And we're going to go way beyond just kettlebell training. It's more of a health and fitness seminar where I'm going to be talking about hormone optimization for athletic performance and overall health. And Steve Cotter's doing a body weight training session, animal-based body weight movements. We have Kim Blackburn doing agility training, Jason Dolby doing some Indian club training for taking your joint mobility to the next level. That's one of those important things for restoration. And then Andrew's going to talk more at the course in more detail than we had time today about how to, again, put together successful training programs for a variety of goals. And if you're a trainer, how to implement kettlebells successfully with other training tools so your clients get the most bang for their buck. So, again, thanks a lot, Andrew. Great information.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we'll
thank
talk to you soon.
Excellent.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
All right. Thanks. See you guys.